my good and faithful minions, and welcome to episode 2 of the Scary Dad Podcast. Today we will be discussing, what I'm going to call the summer of the shark. I know that in the previous episode I said that I was going to discuss some zombie movies, and I decided at the last minute to change direction. And there's a couple of reasons for that. The first one was, as I was prepping for the zombie movie show, it occurred to me that there was a couple of new entries to Amazon and Netflix that I wanted to check out, because although I do like to talk about stuff that happened a long time ago, I actually do like to be somewhat topical. Plus, we've got a couple season premieres of The Walking Dead and the new Fear the Walking Dead coming out soon, and I think maybe it might be a little bit more interesting to have the zombie movie discussion kind of in the middle of the zombie excitement. So that's reason number one. Reason number two is, this summer has been just filled with headlines of shark encounters, shark attacks, crazy occurrences. This summer alone, we've seen 8 to 10 shark attacks off the coast of North Carolina and the east coast of the United States there. There's been 12 in Australia, a couple of them fatal. There was a professional surfer, Mick Fanning, that was attacked by a great white on live TV in the middle of a surf competition. There was not just sharks, but there was a fatal alligator attack in Texas in July. And then all over the world, there seems to be just increased activity of shark attacks and encounters. So that kind of was brought to the fore because, it is still summertime. It is still bikini season. There are still people in the water. Even though this is the Halloween horror and DIY podcast, it's August. My dashboard says it's 96 degrees outside. There's probably quite a few people going to go out and enjoy a trip to the seaside this weekend over the next couple of weeks until the weather changes, so it is topical. In addition to that, I don't know if you've seen it. It's making the rounds on social media right now, but a few days ago down in Mexico, some shark divers have filmed the largest great white shark that has ever been filmed. Her name is Deep Blue, and she is 20 feet long and is the longest ever recorded shark, great white shark anyway, that they've filmed. There's a couple videos of that, and it is quite astounding. I mean, you really get a kind of a feeling of awe at the just the size of this creature. It's pretty incredible. So shark movies, horror movies, monster movies. The original, Jaws came out the year I was born in 1975. I don't know if my parents saw it in the theater or if maybe they just waited till later on, but I seem to have a pretty serious obsession, interest, compulsion, whatever you want to call it, about our finned and toothed brothers of the deep. And that's a fancy way of saying I've been interested in sharks since I was a very small child. Now, the primary inspiration for that interest. This is a little story that happened to me when I was very, very little. When I was a child, my grandparents had a beach house in Bolivar, which is just off of Galveston. It's a ferry ride from Galveston, Texas, for those unfamiliar. And so whenever I was a small kid, I was at the beach a lot, like every weekend during the summer. And my grandfather had a boat, and we were out on, out fishing, out pleasure cruising, whatever. And So I was, you know, I was at home in and in around the water since I was a very young child. Well, one day we were at the beach, and we, you know, we were just hanging around playing with my parents and grandparents and stuff. And there was these guys running a dragnet out in the surf. And what a dragnet is, it looks like a volleyball net, and a couple of guys get on either side and they just kind of walk out through the water and catch whatever happens to be swimming out there. And then they bring it in and unload the net, and then they sort. And they'll take whatever they want out, you know, whatever's keeper, they'll throw in a bucket, and whatever is either dead or doesn't qualify, they'll toss into the back into the surf. Well, these guys were doing that, and I remember watching them throw crabs and little baby sharks and stuff like that back into the water. And then somebody screamed shark, and which, you know, I didn't think much of, because yeah, there was a lot of sharks. There was baby hammerheads, and you know, none of them were more than a foot long, maybe, you know, 18 inches at the best. And but no, out in the water there was a large shark trolling, cruising slowly. His fins were out of the water, you know, I saw his dorsal and his tail, and he was cruising slowly along the beach. And I remember him popping his head up out of the water, and that one eye just kind of scanning the shoreline there. And you know, it probably wasn't intentional, but from my perspective, he was looking right at me, and as if to tell me, you know, I'm waiting for you, come on in. And you know, I was probably 4 years old when that happened, so it certainly left a serious impression on me. You know, I've been pretty much interested in them, scared, interested, fascinated ever since. So anyway, whenever I was about 6 years old, we moved from Houston. My parents moved to a suburb of Corpus Christi, Texas, to a little town called Portland, which no one would ever call a resort, but it's, you know, from a kid's perspective, it kind of had that feel. Sleepy little suburban community, seaside. Everybody had a boat or a kayak or a canoe. Everybody had fishing gear in their garage. Guys fishing off the piers and on the bluffs and the dunes, off the beach. Everybody, you know, it was an outdoorsy sort of town. And we were no different. We were down at the beach quite often. And either the year that we moved there or the following year, there was a rash of shark attacks up and down the Texas Gulf Coast. And a few of them happened either in Corpus Christi Bay or, you know, Port Aransas, Aransas Pass, coastline, popular beach locations. And it renewed in me that obsession with sharks, the mystery of the deep. And we used to go to the library a lot, and I would check out anything that was shark related at all. Started off in the kids section and learned everything I could, and then moved into the into the more advanced section. And you know, I was 7 years old reading what would essentially be, you know, biology college biology textbooks talking about breeding patterns and migration patterns and, you know, pretty hefty biology for a little kid. I ate up everything I could, and it was great. Now, one of the coolest books that I got, and I still have it, it's on my shelf, and I'll take a picture of it and post it as an addendum to the show notes here, is this book that I don't know where it came from, but it's called simply Man Eating Sharks. And inside that book is essentially just a tribute. It was kind of almost a companion piece to the Jaws movie. It was published probably shortly after that movie came out. And it more or less discusses great whites, tigers, makos, bulls, and then it shows pictures of pretty horrendous and traumatic shark attacks. Flesh stripped from bones, you know, dead and or dying victims laying on the beach. It's even got sketches and drawings inside of, you know, it reads sort of like a sensational Shark Week, you know, episode. It's a clickbait book or something like that, and that's exactly what it was published for. But yeah, it's scarier than any of the shark movies, and even though its context is probably pretty out there, it's also, you know, it's all real. These are really hurt people and really real sharks and real damage. So I used to pore over that book and read and learn and know, and anybody who said anything about sharks, I was the expert. I was a little marine biologist back in the day. So, shark movies and horror movies having to do with sharks and nature gone awry, you know, we love them. I think one of the main reasons we love them is because they're real. You know, psychopaths are real. There are entire facilities dedicated to housing violent, fanatical, murderous psychopaths. But, you know, they're an aberration. They're not supposed to be. You know, you would never look at a shark and think, wow, that is just an anomaly of nature. No, not really. Sharks don't care. They're fish. They're opportunistic. There is no emotion whatsoever. And they simply don't care. And that's probably what makes them scarier than, say, I don't know, a killer clown or something like that. Because the clown's motivated. A shark's just hungry. And if you get in its way, it may or may not bite you. Hey, it may not even eat you. It just might take a bite just to see what you're made out of. But yet, then you're either maimed or bleeding out or bitten in half or something. And there's just simply nothing you can do. That's all there is. So, you know, the king mother of all, the king mother, well, you know, the queen mother of summer blockbusters hit in the summer of 1975. I was born in the fall of 1975. And everybody knows Jaws. And I will probably do an entire episode on Jaws at some point in the future, because there's just simply so much to talk about. I'm not going to really talk about Jaws much today, other than to say it was not only really what it was the first true summer blockbuster, but it also spawned a whole lot of copycats. A lot, you know, in the success of Jaws, as both a horror movie and as a horror trope, spawned a whole lot of the studios were looking to replicate or cash in on the success of Jaws. So you had follow-ups. In 1977, you had the movie Orca, about a crazed killer whale. You know, Jaws spawned its own sequels. The second one came out, I believe, in 1980, and then the third one came out in 1983. I'll have to check the date on that second one. Not real positive. And then there was, 1978 also spawned Piranha. Much smaller than a great white shark, but, you know, scary nonetheless. Anything that'll get you under the water is, you know, kind of creepy, especially if you can't see them. So, I'm going to talk a little bit about each of these movies. I'm going to skip the first Jaws, and I'm going to skip Jaws 2 for a little while, and I'm going to go straight to Jaws 3. Now, why Jaws 3, do you say? Well, I actually wrote about this one on the Dumb White Husband blog, and I'll put a link to it in the show notes as well. But see, what happened was, living in a little seaside town in the early 80s, we got cable, and when we got cable, it came with HBO. And with HBO came the constant rotation of the movie of the day. And the movie of the day was Jaws 3. That was their headline, you know, part of their summer rotation. And this classic film, starring Dennis Quaid, Bess Armstrong, Louis Gossett Jr., among others, you know, and a couple of really fake-looking foam great white sharks. You know, hey man, I was 8 years old, 7 years old actually, whenever I started watching Jaws 3. And given my experience and my knowledge, I knew, of course, that it was fake, but I did not care. Sharks bite people, people scream and bleed. Billy, scary dad, is obsessed. I'm on board, I'm interested, and I'm there for the full run. So yeah, I watched Jaws 3. That was the killer shark movie to beat all killer shark movies. I love that thing. I loved it. And you know, Jaws 3, its very existence implied that there was a 1 and a 2 out there in the ether somewhere. But unlike today, where you can just dial up your favorite movie off of Amazon or Netflix, or even just run down to the old, I don't know what would it be now, Best Buy or whatever, to buy a DVD. Back then, you pretty much had two choices. It was either on cable or, you know, regular television, or you could rent it at the video store. I remember being that little, video rentals were only a couple bucks, but to buy a VHS tape was something like $80, and that was in the early 80s. That was crazy. And those prices didn't come down for a long, long time. I think they were still that much when I was in elementary and junior high school. You could rent them for $3, but if you broke it, it cost you like $75 to replace. Pretty ridiculous, anyway. So, you know, you'd go to the video store, and, you know, unfortunately, you know, not all movies were always readily available. Your little local video stores didn't always have everything in stock. I remember, you know, most video stores, maybe it was just a distribution thing or a cost thing, but a lot of them would have the sequels to movies and not the actual first movie itself. I remember the video store we used to go to used to have Jaws 3 and used to have a copy of Jaws 2 as well in a damaged case, but no what we used to call Jaws 1. Whenever there were sequels, the first one was always called 1. So no Jaws 1 in that video store. So you know, watch Jaws 2 Jaws 3 quite a bit. And then one night on late night television, I guess the horror movie late night, they played Jaws 2, and I got my dad to record it for me off of TV, and the videotape that I used to watch was funny. He recorded it off of a TV back then. You know, in order to record a movie off TV, what you would do is you would sit with the remote in your hand and you would press record and you would watch the movie. And then when the commercials came on, you would pause the recording and thereby editing out the commercials. But you had to watch the the movie straight through and make sure that you paused and unpaused at the same time, you know, at the correct times. Well, my copy of Jaws 2 on an old VHS was cleanly edited probably through the first half of the movie and then not edited in the second, which means Dad got tired at some point and said, forget about this, and just left it on and went to bed. And but hey, I didn't care. I had Jaws 2, and that was probably the following year. So when I've been 8 or 9 years old, watching the shark terrorize the seaside town. And you know, shortly after that, I guess either off TV or through a rental, you know, we saw the first one. Now, the second one starts with the divers at the bottom of the ocean. They're actually exploring the wreckage of the Orca, which was, you know, obviously the ship from the first movie. And you know, I mentioned it in the blog, but whenever you watch movies in reverse order that way, it seems like a series of prequels. Not so much that you're watching them backwards, but this is the movie, and this movie has history that's being referenced, and then you can go back and watch the original movie and catch up on whatever that history may be. And that was the case with the Jaws movies for me. So I discovered them kind of in reverse, and you know, even though as an adult and somebody who understands and appreciates, you know, quality in different ways that I didn't understand when I was 7 or 8, I understand that the first Jaws is a masterpiece and its sequels are schlocky studio attempts to cash in on the success of the first one. But really and truly, the second and the third one hold a little bit closer place of in my heart. Honestly, the third one more than any of them, just as a part of my life that was influential and really kind of affected me. So you know, I don't care if it's Megalodon or Deep Blue Sea. These movies are horrible, and I really can't recommend them to anybody except for 8-year-old me, who apparently, since I'm running a pop culture website at my age, means that he's still alive in there somewhere, and probably closer to the surface than I would like to admit. So I won't come to you and tell you that a lot of these movies are necessarily good, but that doesn't make them any less great, I suppose. But yeah, so check out the Jaws 1, 2, and especially 3. Try to watch it through the eyes of a 7-year-old boy living in a seaside town in 1983. And, you know, see if it changes your opinion on some of these special effects and whatnot. Also on HBO, you know, they used to show whatever one, you know, I don't remember what year it was when, you know, it came out in 1977, but it seemed to me even then as an also-ran was the movie Orca. Now, Orca had a pretty stellar cast as far as things go. I mean, it had Richard Harris in it, and it had Bo Derek, who were both, you know, Bo Derek especially at the time was top of the line. And Richard Harris, you know, I think he's been top of the line since the day he was born. You know, but it was, even as a little kid, I remember watching and thinking, man, this is kind of a Jaws ripoff. Whales don't do that. But even then, you know, I watched it in constant rotation, and I watched it a lot and a lot and a lot and a lot. And then it was on late night TV not too long ago, and I watched it again. And it kind of holds up, strangely enough. I mean, it's got its moments, especially when the whale takes off Bo Derek's leg. That's pretty tough. I'm not going to go too long into that one because it's been a, you know, rather long time since I saw it all the way through. Even when I saw it on late night TV, it was just that, you know, kind of the middle third before hey man, I gotta get to bed, I've gotta work tomorrow, and this isn't really keeping my attention. You know, nice little nostalgia piece, but now, there was another movie, and that was, had nothing to do with the killer shark, but it does have Killers of the Deep, and it's another one I'm rather closely related to, in a sort of strange way. Whenever I was a child, my grandparents used to take me to this place called Aquarina Springs. And Aquarina Springs was an amusement park in Central Texas, Hill Country, where a whole bunch of natural springs it would flow into the river, and at some point in the past they dammed it up and it made natural freshwater lakes that were extremely clear. And they used to have glass bottom boat tours and Old West Town, and it was essentially just it was an amusement park on the lake. And we used to go there relatively often, actually, whenever I was a kid. And like I said, they had glass bottom boat rides. Well, Aquarina Springs happened to also be the place that they filmed the movie Piranha in 1978.
There's something strange in the water at Lost River Lake. Something you can't see, something you can't feel. Until it's too late.
And I didn't see Piranha until, you know, a little bit later, maybe the, you know, I don't know, in my Jaws obsession, that was 1983, 1984, so 84, 85, so Piranha had been around for a while, but it was another one of those, you know, summer exploitation movies that they would drop onto the HBO or the late night rotation or something. And once it's there, you know, you see it once, you've seen it, you know, 10 or 15 times and over the course of a few weeks. What was special about Piranha was that it was filmed at Aquarina Springs. And I remember at one point we were on one of those glass bottom boat tours, and they were explaining that the perch that lived in the lake, they were similar to piranha in the way that they schooled, and that the way that they were similar in appearance, and that essentially that's why they chose that lake, is because they could get easy good visuals through the clear water of the schooling perch and get some great shots of. You know, was ostensibly piranha in the water. Well, I did not care that those were harmless perch down in that water. I did not care that it would be, you know, another 100 million years before any of those things would have even anything resembling a tooth. I had seen piranha, and I knew what it could do, and I knew how terrifying they were, and I knew of that little sound that they made. And I couldn't get off the bottom of that boat fast enough. And all of this was made worse by the fact that they would feed them. They would feed little food pellets into the water, and the perch would surface. They'd come up and eat the food. So, you know, as the guide's telling you that this is where we filmed that movie that so kept you up at night, and you know, the reason why is because these fish act just like those killer fish from that movie that kept you up all night, and let's feed them and bring them closer to the boat. So I remember hopping up off that bottom of that boat and onto the seat and kind of trying to get away from the perch, you know, from the fish that were surfacing, until it occurred to me that I was close enough to the side that I could easily fall out of the boat and turn myself into piranha food. So the movie Piranha has always had that little special place in my heart, you know, from that little story there, but also just, you know, going back, Aquarina Springs, I mean, the lake still exists, but the resort no longer does. It's a research facility now. I don't know, I guess University of Texas owns it, and they do, you know, basically ecological research and that sort of thing. There's no longer a diving pig, no longer mermaid dancers or the Old West town or the place where you can get a wax impression of a camel or a pressed penny or any of that. So it's gone. It lives only in my memory, and my memory pretty much consists of being terrified of carnivorous Amazon fish. So, you know, I guess you take your memories where you can. You know, little addendum there. Jaws 4, Jaws the Revenge, the one where the shark explodes upon being hit by a boat. We saw that in the theater. I saw that in the theater with my grandfather and my cousin. It is probably one of the more universally reviled movies, much less horror movies or shark movies or franchise of a once classic. It's pretty much just universally hated, and it is pretty dumb. But man, whenever I was you know, whenever it came out, I was 9, 10, 11 years old, whatever I was, and it wasn't stupid to us, man. I think we were scared to take a bath after that. You know, sometimes as an adult, you look at things and you think, man, you know, that's dumb. But then when you look at it through the eyes of a child, you're like, wow, I can see why the PG-13 rating or you know, whatever. So I've got to think about that whenever interacting with my kids. My daughter, like me, spawn of Scary Dad, is very interested in sharks. Whenever she was quite a bit smaller, you know, she and I would sit there and watch Shark Week. She couldn't really talk, but she knew, you know, she was interested. And then my dad left a book, hardcover kind of textbook like about sharks, and that's one of her favorites. She likes to look through it, and even now at her age, she knows the names and, you know, all of this. One of the first toys that I got her, not baby toys, but just a me to her, was a great white Beanie Baby. We were watching Shark Week, and I thought, this child needs to have a shark toy. So I dialed it up on Amazon, and boom, got sent a great white Beanie Baby, and she calls it the Smoochy Shark, and it's one of her favorites, one of my favorites. At some point, she's going to be old enough to watch these things, and I really hope she's as interested in the genre as I am. I hope it doesn't sour her her thoughts, you know, towards being interested in sharks, to you know, to go back and look at some of these old schlocky movies that are out there, you know, and see how they're portrayed. I hope she has kind of a more even approach, like I did. I knew that the movies were false, but it was, you know, it was a thing. But I was also reading library books about, you know, the biology and their place in the food chain and all of that stuff. So hopefully she'll have kind of an even-handed approach such that I did. But, you know, that remains to be seen. You know, as I was kind of looking up, I didn't, you know, I never really thought about it before, but these movies are in what's called the natural horror subgenre. And it's really kind of anything that, anytime nature goes awry, or anytime we reach out to nature or encounter nature and it reacts to us in a negative way, you know, can be pretty scary, you know. Bee stings, wasps, you know, they'll kill more people every year than a shark, but every time you read about a shark attack or anything like that, people will use that. Well, the thing about a bee is, yeah, if you're allergic and you get stung by enough of them, and yeah, but, you know, typically we're not primordially, if that's even a word, primal. We don't have a primal fear of something that we're a couple hundred times bigger than. But the fact that there is, as we speak right now, giant monsters, you know, in the depths swimming around, that really the only thing separating us being alive and interacting with friends and family from being, you know, a big pile of shark poop on the ocean floor, well, is not going in the water, honestly. And there's nothing we can do about that. You know, you want to avoid getting bit by a shark, don't go where they are. And probably, you know, is a little bit of a bleak way to look at it, but it's true. There's, you know, quite a few surfers, quite a few divers this year alone that probably wish they had just stayed home that day. And they don't bite many people, but the ones they do remember it for life. But that is about it for episode 2, Season of the Shark, or Summer of the Shark, depending on which one of these gets the stamp at the on the end of the mix. Thank you for joining me once again. If you like what you're hearing, please share it, tweet it, get it out there. Let me know what you like, what you don't. Reach out to me in the comment section or on social media. I'm kind of all over the place. Do me a favor and just let me know what I'm doing right, what I'm doing that you'd like to see more or less of. And I'm going to leave you with that. Thank you so much. You guys have a great evening. Watch something scary and tell me what you thought of it. Take care.